All right, let me start. Okay, before I start to end, any questions from last time?
Can you quickly go over the up and down notation
for which one?
The indices.
Which indices?
You have a lot of, like, you have, like, you had F, A, B.
Right. Okay.
C.
Yeah, I'll cover that today. Yeah, that's a good point. Anyone else or for the F for the structure constants, right?
Yeah, or kind of in general.
Okay. Yeah. So in general, basically what happens is you can usually lower, so if you have some vector, tensor, things like that, so vectors are usually come with indices upstairs.
Okay.
And there are other objects, say you can call them covectors. They come with indices downstairs. Okay? So these kind of indices, you can give them, this is called covariant index, and this is contravariant. Now, on spaces where you can define a metric tensor, so a metric tensor is something that allows you to define angles and distances. So for example, and also lengths of vectors. So for example, if you have a tensor like this, you can say, okay, the length of a vector is given by this, okay? And this is, you know, so in Euclidean scale, Euclidean space, if we use Cartesian coordinate, this guy is just delta mu nu, the Kronecker delta. And this is essentially just the Pythagorean, the kind of the usual distance that we understand. So this is an Euclidean space. Okay? But in Minkowski space, for example, you know, this guy is not just 1, 1, 1, it has a minus 1. So that means, you know, this square, if you like, you know, let's call this V Euclidean, V Minkowski. You know, this guy can have, depending on its value, it can be positive or negative or 0. And this has application in physics, because in physics, you know, what will happen is that you have something like space-time, and there's, in unit c equals to 1, there are the light cones, and vectors can be future-pointing or past-pointing, or that is, they can be within the light cone. In that case, you know, this is not mu, this is Minkowski. In that case, according to my, so this is x, this is t, sorry, very important. So according to my definition, you know, so see that the time, the 0, 0 component is minus 1. So when the vector is its square is negative, its geometric interpretation, it's in the light cone. But if the vector norm is positive, then it's, you know, so this is basically time-like, and this is also time-like, but vectors which are, you know, outside the light cone, they are called space-like. And if they're on the light cone, then they're called null or light-like. And they have very different, you know, physical interpretations depending on the context. But once you have a metric tensor, you can come up with a shorthand for this, where you you define the covariant vector by essentially just using the metric tensor. So this is the definition, okay? The one with the index downstairs. You can, so essentially you can relate. So there are, you know, there could be objects which have naturally a covariant index, but they don't necessarily will have any relationship with things with upstairs. But having a metric tensor allows you to relate them, okay? And so this is, in very brief, how, you know, so you always need a metric tensor to lower and raise indices. So the other way, so you can introduce a metric tensor with things upstairs, and it's defined to be the inverse of this. So then you can use that to raise indices. So, and you can verify that these two guys are actually consistent. Okay. All right. So before I move on, I just want to make a very quick comment about the irreducibility representation that, in that, you know, the degeneracy argument, you know, discussion we had. And I can actually, I'm going to argue that if you, because at some point what we did is that we took our representation and we applied it to some vector and generated, you know, for all G, right? And we generated some vector space, right? So if I start with psi as an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian, then I'm actually going to generate only vectors in the subspace in which psi lives, right? So in that case, you know, the dij that I wrote down, they are actually going to produce an irreducible representation. Because, you know, so I'm not going to give a rigorous proof. I didn't have time to flesh it out, but the intuitive argument is something like this. Suppose it wasn't. So, you know, so the d's have this, you know, have this form. There's one irreducible representation and there's another irreducible representation. Then according to, you know, Schur's lemma, you know, our Hamiltonian will have some form like this, and this is say lambda times one, and this is say k dimensional, this is say mu times lambda, this is say, I don't know, p dimensional or something like this. Now if I, now this, in this basis, you know, this vector, because it's, suppose it's an eigenstate with eigenvalue lambda, then this vector will have a form something like this. So now if I apply all of these guys to this thing, I'm going to just generate, you know, all these components, but I'm not going to generate anything non-zero here, right? So this is basically the rough argument why I think that if I start with an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian and apply all the DGs, then I actually generate irreducible subspace.
Yeah, I think that my problem was, yeah, if you start from one vector in the eigenspace,
right, yeah,
and you do its orbit by the action of the
right,
group,
exactly,
and you take the span of that,
yeah,
it will give you an irreducible
right,
representation.
Yeah.
But it is not true to say that the eigenspaces are irreducible superrepresentations. So this will only, in general, give a subspace of the eigenspace. So it might not give the whole lambda 1k, but just a little piece of it. You know, like the Hamiltonian may have other lambdas which are not part of that subspace.
Right. Yeah, but that would be a case of accidental degeneracy, essentially.
Yeah.
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 OK. All right, cool. All right, so let's move on. Sorry, yeah. Yeah.
A question from the left-hand side.
Yeah.
In a geometric point of view, like the metric tensor is like a projection from the cotangent bundle to the tangent bundle.
I wouldn't say it's a.
I guess what you might say is that the,
because
what
you're relating,
it's a linear map from so
probably not for you.
Right yeah so
it's
isomorphisms.
What is the name?
Musical isomorphisms.
Musical, like music.
Yeah, because they're usually because they don't have anything to do with music. It's just because the notation is usually either flat or sharp. Use the ball from flat.
Oh, I see. I've never heard of that notation.
In the elements of.
It, and it is an isomorphism between the Planitzer space and the cotangent space, which which usually doesn't exist.
So the tangent space and the cotangent space are isomorphic.
If you have a metric tensor.
Yeah.
Not in general, but if you have a metric tensor, that
yeah.
I mean, they're of course isomorphic in the sense that they have the same dimension, but they're canonically isomorphic if you have a metric tensor.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in principle, you know, they don't talk to each other, essentially. The metric in purely geometric setting, physics, of course, can do all kind of stuff, but the metric tensor kind of, you know, establishes an isomorphism between the two. And that isomorphism might be different depending on what theory you are for the same manifold. Okay. All right, so we were talking about the properties of Lie algebra, so I think it's worthwhile to go through it again. So properties of Lie algebra and the brackets. First is it's skew symmetric. So if I have it's antisymmetric. And the other thing is that, you know, we choose bases. So these are supposed the generators. Then the set, we consider this as a vector space. Over the real or the complex numbers. Most of the time, I will consider them to be, you know, a vector space over the reals. But tomorrow, you know, when we are going to do the, we're going to build up the representation theory of SU2, we will actually have to, you know, think of them in over the complex numbers. So even if these as matrices are complex, you know, as they will be for some groups, the vector space that we are considering, you know, for writing down the structure constants where the structure constants are real is actually a real vector space. So, you know, we'll be very careful about which thing we are choosing. And then when it's a real vector space, the structure constants for the compact, the algebras at least, you know, these F, A, B, C's are real when, you know, when this is a vector space over the real. The Lie bracket satisfies the Jacobi identity. And this has, because, you know, what does the Lie bracket does? It takes two elements of the Lie algebra and maps you onto another element of the Lie algebra. So you can nesting Lie brackets are allowed. So you can do this and so what this is telling us is the Lie So the Lie algebra is actually not an associative algebra. Okay? And what the Jacobi identity is telling us is that, you know, how do you deal with this non-associativity? And then if you plug in, you know, the basis into the Jacobi identity, you get a relationship for the structure constants, which is easy to derive but boring to write down. But I will do it for the sake of country and nation and country or whatnot. Right.
So, Tiva.
Yeah.
So now we have things with three.
Yeah.
Set three. What is that?
Oh, right. So, I mean, so those are, so I just did this for vectors, but there are tensors. So, you know, let's I think what one needs is kind of an overview of what are tensors and how do they arise in physics. So let's discuss this outside the class because time is limited, but you know, I won't be able to give you like a thorough theory, but there are enough examples in physics. I hope I can convince you that, for example, the Maxwell tensor is actually a rank 2 tensor. You know, so there are interesting tensors which have more than one index, and you know, we can discuss. But let's come back to that outside the class, okay? But it's super important to feel comfortable with indices. So I agree, it's a very important thing. But here, you just have. I mean, they just take some value. That's all you have to know. So like, you know, so for example, say it could be. 1, 2, 3 is say 5, and then if 3, 1, 2 could be say 6 in general, right? That's what I mean. Is that all these different, you know? So if it had two indices, you could think of it as some matrix, for example. But you know, if it has three indices, you know, you can think of like a three-dimensional array of numbers, right? That's not the geometric way of thinking about it, but you know, but for the time being, just think about it like that. All right, so in a minute, I'm going to introduce a very important representation called the adjoint representation. And using the adjoint representation, so using the adjoint representation, you know, you can define a metric on this vector space. You know, known as the Cartan metric. An equivalent metric construction is also known as the Killing form, and it was popularized by a mathematician. But he, late in his life, he admitted that Killing had, although he had defined it, he had never used it. So. Using Cartan's name is much more significant because Cartan actually classified all the Lie algebras. So the Cartan metric is given by the trace over the adjoint representation. So where basically these generators are taken from the adjoint representation. So let me put it. And in a minute, I will tell you what these TAs are, what the adjoint representation is. Now, using this metric, you can then lower the indices of the structure constants. You can define ABC, for example, you can define that to be, say, G of CD, F ABD. And if your group is compact, you know, if your Lie group is compact, not a very, you know, kind of a straightforward exercise shows that FABC is completely antisymmetric. So what this means is that whenever you switch the indices, do an odd permutation of indices, it comes back to itself up to a minus sign. So essentially, so if I have, say, ABC is minus FBAC, or FA, say, BC is minus FACB, so on and so forth, okay? That is what this thing means. Okay, this is notation, and when you do relativity, this bracket notation will be made a little bit more clear. It's basically anti-symmetrizing all those. Ivan, you look confused.
I was just wondering whether it's true not only if the group is compact, but also if the Lie algebra is compact, that the structure constants are. Because there's a notion, I'm confused by the notion of compactness of the algebra, because there are two definitions which are not equivalent. One is that the group is compact,
right?
And but that of course only works if the Lie algebra, well, one of the group is if the group is compact, and the other one is if the Cartan metric is negative definite, and they do not coincide. And was wondering which of those are the ones that gives the antisymmetry.
Right. I mean, in physics books, it's the latter that is used, but it's kind of always assumed that somehow they're correlated, but the proof is never given.
Okay.
So, for example, if you consult the book by Georgi, there's a very famous book on Lie algebras and particle physics. Georgi. He does that, but of course he kind of, you know, he doesn't prove that the one thing comes from the other.
Okay.
But I think that's, they are related, but I'm not exactly sure how they are related. All right, so before we move on to the definition of the adjoint representation, you know, let me just introduce something which was implicit all along, but has not been made explicit, is the idea of a G module. So our representations D act on some vector space, right? Because they're matrices. So sometimes you will see the vector space V on which, you know, a representation acts, a representation, say, D of G acts is called a G module. Now, we discussed at length, about representation of Lie groups, but we haven't really talked about representations of Lie algebra. But you know, again, some of it should be fleshed out. So let me just do that front. So that blackboard in your school, was that electronic like this? Or it was just one of those, like?
Yeah, it was like a push-pull.
Oh, right, okay. All right.
I think you might be a little bit more safe.
Sorry?
I think you might be a little bit more safe because the guy who did it, he was like pulling it up or down with his hand there.
Right. Oh, I see, okay, yeah. Anyway, still, I'm not gonna risk losing my digits. Okay, so let's just talk about the representation of a Lie algebra. Uh, So a representation rho of a Lie algebra G tilde. So this is a notation you will see, especially in a lot of math books, is that suppose you have a Lie group G. So this is some Lie group. Then the associated Lie algebra is written using Gothic forms. Okay? So this is sometimes the Lie algebra of G. Of course, I am not LaTeX, and I cannot, I don't have MathFrak installed. And if you were in the matrix, of course, I could just like download that add-on. So I'm not gonna write it like that. Instead, I'm going to use the notation where I use G tilde, okay? So a representation rho of a Lie algebra, say G tilde, is a map from the G tilde to the Lie algebra of the GL NC, you know, where, you know, such that the Lie bracket is preserved, meaning if we take two elements of the Lie algebra, x and y, and apply this map rho on it, then that should give us the same thing as applying rho on the individual elements and taking their commutators. All right, so this is, now let's look at the adjoint representation. Of a Lie algebra So I mean, I'm a bit of a meat and potatoes kind of guy, although I'm vegetarian mostly, which means I'm very down pedestrian. I like thinking non-abstract way. So you can think, for example, you know, we are looking at Lie algebra, they're matrices, right? So suppose you take a Lie algebra element, TA, it's a matrix. Or you know, an X, it's a matrix. But the group G, element G, are also matrices. So that means that you can actually multiply Lie algebra elements by groups, elements. You know, they are matrices which can multiply each other. You know, it may or may not make mathematical sense, but you can do that. So, you know, based on this observation, you can say, okay, I can actually define like a nice operation on the Lie algebra by the Lie group. And this is called the adjoint action of, say, some G in big G on the Lie algebra element TA, which is in, it is given by right, so this is the adjoint action. So in a minute, I'm going to define another adjoint action, but of the Lie algebra on itself. For that, we use a small a. For this, we use big A. So this, in this definition, the adjoint action is big.
I'm a little confused, but
what kind of like mathematical object is a Lie algebra? Because before you wrote it, it's like an equation, then commutator, structure constants.
Right. You mean what kind of mathematical object, as in like?
Like what is the Lie algebra?
Right. I mean, it's a. You can think of it as a vector space of elements where you have a product defined on it, and that product takes two elements into one element, and that product is antisymmetric. And of course, if I'm defining product, I have to tell you their associativity rule. It's a non-associative product, and that. And how you deal with the non-associativity is given by the Jacobi identity. So that's the most abstract way that I can. You have seen this in other contexts as well, probably. If you have seen it done in your classical mechanics, the Poinsot brackets are an example of the algebra as well. So they don't always have to be matrices. For our purposes, we'll always think of them in terms of matrices, of some. The generators of some matrix group.
So is the Lie bracket, is that the same as the Lie algebra?
Yes, it is the, yeah. So you're right. In our case, the Lie bracket is, we will just think about it in terms of it's some commutator of matrices, okay? I mean, I guess mathematicians will think of it much more in more abstract terms, but that's not, I won't go down that route, okay? All right, so my claim now is that this action induces.
He's generous, he's
the proposal. Okay, action forms a. Like an irreducible representation of the Lie algebra. And how do we do that? How do we show that? Well, I think it forms, yeah. So look at the. I can say that, so for example, if I take T let's call this a T tilde, then it's easy to verify that this also satisfies the same Lie algebra. And therefore these guys are, what we can do is that we can write, say, this tilde elements as linear combinations of the original generators. Now let's look at an infinitesimal element. So let take G, which has the form of some identity plus plus an infinitesimal, like a Lie algebra element. So this is an infinitesimal element of your Lie group. Of course, because the way we defined T tilde, the C's are functions of G, and G is a function of theta, so C is actually a function of theta. So the C's should have an analogous expansion, and it'll be something like, so this minus sign is I just introduced it so that it, the end result matches up with the rest of literature. So the C's should have some form like this. So then what we can do is that, you go to that side. So if you're not satisfied with the answer, come and talk to me after the class and we'll discuss this as well.
I just want to hear your T tilde. I can't see the indices.
Oh, sorry. Which tilde?
The T tilde C, the third line.
This one?
No, the next one.
Okay. This is, you're right because I made a mistake.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. So this is T tilde C is C, C, B, T, B. So there's a sum over B.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, so in this, you know, if you use that infinitesimal element, then G, so T A, G inverse equals to, say, T tilde A, you know, this equation becomes, on the left-hand side, we have 1 plus I theta, say, this thing. So I'm basically, this is, so theta dot T is a shorthand notation for this thing. And then TA, and then this is 1 minus I theta dot T. And on the right-hand side, I have TA minus I theta C, FABC theta B. And there would be some second order term, but I'm ignoring that because I'm actually going to throw away the second order term from here as well. So if I now do the algebra, and because these thetas are arbitrary, so we get to the point, we get this equation where the commutator of TC and TA is minus F ABC of TB. So now let's introduce notation that the small adjoint action of some TC on TA is the is basically given by this. This is the definition. And therefore, this is equal to minus F ABC. So essentially, the way I want to look at it is that the action of TC over TA is, you can think of it as some matrix F, which is labeled by C, and its elements are given by AB. And these elements are given by F, A, B, C. That there's a matrix acting on this. So if I write this, the adjoint action is of TC over on TA is, I think there should be a minus sign here, is basically the FC, the matrix FC, acting on the Lie algebra, all the Lie algebra elements. So this is a it's a linear transformation on the Lie algebra elements. That's what I mean. So now we can compare this to the Lie algebra, and then we find that, well, these matrices are nothing but the this matrix FC is defined through its element in the following way. So we have now these matrices. So what and then you can show that if you take the matrix then using the Jacobi identity, but for the structure constants, you know, it's a few lines of algebra. It's actually just a page long, so I don't have time to do this, that these matrices satisfy the same Lie algebra. So therefore, you know, this adjoint action, therefore this adjoint action is, you know, the adjoint action, you know, generates a representation of the Lie algebra. And to show that it's irreducible, you have to assume that the Lie algebra has a certain form called, it's a simple Lie algebra, and you know, we'll get into that later, what the definition of that is. So a very important comment is this. Suppose that, you know, the dimension of your Lie algebra is, say, n. So what does that mean? That means that you have n of these generators, okay? But the representation that you're talking in, you pick some representation of these guys at random, those matrices don't have to be n-dimensional. So for example, you know, I told you about this group SU2, which we will spend a lot of time in tutorial. So these are 2x2 unitary matrices with unit determinant. And as we shall see today, that this group has dimension 3. But the matrices, so they should have 3 generators. But the matrices are 2x2 dimensional. But if I look at the adjoint representation, the way it's defined, you know, all these indices take, you know, the value from 1 to n. So the adjoint representation is an example of a representation where the dimension of the matrices is equal to the dimension of the Lie algebra. Yeah.
You mentioned that there is a difference between like the capital AD, the adjoint, like, is it an operation or like, and the lowercase one, I guess.
So yeah, the lowercase one, so the uppercase one is an action of the finite group elements on the Lie algebra. You know, so these are finite group elements. The lowercase one is an action of the Lie algebra on itself given by the commutator.
So that's like a definition of what the lowercase one is?
Yeah,
or is
yeah.
That just like a result?
Yeah, this is a definition.
Okay.
This is a definition. Okay. Yeah.
Whereas like we define the capital one over like that.
Right.
That's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So on the other one, it's... the other one is big A, it's capital A or?
Yeah.
This one's smaller.
Thank you. So all right, let's just write that down. Okay, I can use this
one. Sorry, capital F is defined to be I, the lowercase I.
Right. Well, the capital F is defined when we did that. It's over there. When we, the CA, we did the expansion of CA. That is where capital F is defined.
So why capital F is equal to the I lead a small case?
Because we derived from here that the adjoint action on TA is this thing, okay? All right, so so I'll go a little bit over time today because we started late. So the dimension of the matrices in the adjoint representation is the same as the dimension of the Lie algebra or the group. Okay, so next, I want to discuss two very, like, frequently occurring, you know, types of groups. And because those of you who haven't seen group matrix groups a lot, these groups are the ones that occur most frequently in physics. So. So next we are going to talk about the examples of some matrix groups, some matrix D groups, and their Lie algebras. So what do I mean by matrix groups? So matrix groups are groups which are defined through their matrix, through some matrix representation. So for example, we can think of the ON group. So the ON group consists of real N by N matrices O, such that O transpose O gives you the identity matrix. So this is just a generalization of O3. So in components, this equation is IJ O IK delta JK. So there's a sum over I here. And because it's a transpose, you know, the first index is adding the second index. If it weren't transposed, then the second index would be same as the first index of the second one. All right, so we'll need this. So we can ask, what is the dimension of this guy? So from the diagonal of this matrix, we get, so okay, O in general has n squared, say, real components, right? But what are the constraints? Not all these components are independent because they have to satisfy this equation. So there are constraints. And so from the diagonal, we get n constraints, right? Constraints from when j is equal to k. So when j is not equals to k, you know, this equation is symmetric, and so the that means that we get from the off diagonal n squared minus n. So this is the number of diagonal elements, but because the elements on the upper right hand side are equal to the constraints from the upper right hand side are equal to the constraints from the lower left side, we divide it by 2. So constraints from when j is not equals to k. So the number of independent, you know, the number of independent parameters is the number of n squared minus n plus n squared minus n by 2. And this is n minus 1, just a couple of lines of algebra divided by 2. So in other words, the dimension of On is half n, n minus 1. Let's see if this you know, matches up with what we expect. So, for example, the dimension of SO2 is half times 2 times 1, which is 1, right? This is what we expect. Similarly, the dimension of SO3, which is the rotation group, is 3 rotation, 3 rotational angle. So the dimension of, so here I'm saying SO, but it could be just O. Because as we saw that the discrete transformations don't really add any new parameters to the group. So the dimension of O4 is 6, and this is the SO cousin, the SO component of this is closely related to the Lorentz group. So I should have mentioned that this implies that the determinant of O is plus or minus 1. And the determinant of O plus 1 part, we call that SON. And that's the part that's continuously connected to the identity. So this is the this is how we get the dimension. It's pretty straightforward. Now, what about the generators? What do the generators look like? Let's figure that out. So the generators are to find the generators, we take an infinitesimal element. Actually, Let's use a slightly different convention. So, you know, we usually define the Lie algebra element parameterized in this way. There was an I there, but you can actually absorb the I in the you know definition of the generator. So just for the purpose of classification, for the O n groups, I'm going to assume that you know a finite element has this form, and therefore there is no I here. Okay, just for this. You can always, if you introduce an I here, then that means you're also, you know, that you're redefining TA to be say minus ITA or something. Okay. So if I do that, then if I plug this equation to O transpose O equal to one. We get that the you know this equation implies that the generators are antisymmetric. Okay. Now there's a clever way of labeling the generators of ON. So labeling. And the way is this. You label them by like this, but you say that, so let's put a bracket around so that, oh, not, no, that's confusing. So you label them by two integers, a and b, and a and b go from 1 to n. And then you say that they're like antisymmetric in A and B. What this means is that, for example, there will be a generator T, say 1, 2, and this will be linearly dependent on 2, 1. So these are not independent generators, but they're related like this. But for example, the generator T 1, 1 is 0 because of this antisymmetry. So this way, if you label it this way, then you can, you know, this implies that there are, say, only half times n minus 1 linearly independent generators. Okay. So this is kind of a little bit, so for example, for SO3, so if I take SO3 or say O3, you know, the generators would be T12, T23, T31. And what this will do is that this 1,2 will generate the rotation in the 1,2 plane. And this will generate rotation in, say, 2,3 plane. And this will generate rotation in 3,1 plane. Now, it's an accident of three dimensions that the number of independent axes and the number of independent 2 planes is the same. It doesn't happen in higher dimensions, right? So when we talk about SO3, we can actually introduce some other generators, say TA, which are related to these guys by like this. And you can, oh, okay? And these are the ones that we usually, or let's call them J. Then, you know, if you now work out the Lie algebra, it's something like epsilon A, B, C, J, of C, okay? And because I've chosen these guys to be real, that's why there's no I here. All right, so this is an example of how, but you can see that, you know, we have exactly three linearly independent generators. There's also T21, but that's minus T12. That's not independent. Similar, there's a T32, but that's not linearly independent. Okay, so this clever way of labeling means that the label is antisymmetric, but the matrix itself is on antisymmetric, so we can rewrite this as, let's just rewrite, TAB, this is, if you take the transpose of this, you get minus TAB.
Okay.
And then you, so you can actually write down matrices which are both, you know, they are antisymmetric in both their labels and indices. And this is easy to see that this satisfies that criteria. Okay, so this is the explicit form of your generators of, say, generators of say, SON or ON. Okay. Now, there's a painful exercise that everyone should do once in their life, which is the derivation of the Lie algebra of SON or ON. And I'm not going to do that here. I did that sometime. I've forgotten. I've blocked it out. It's actually not bad. Sorry, I'm just exaggerating. So, you know, you can verify using...
It was in the tutorial, wasn't it? In the first tutorial, the derivation that we did was for general SOP, comma Q.
Oh, yeah. Did you do that? Well, you did. Okay. The second one, you mean?
No, the first. It was... Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, yeah. Sorry, I've forgotten. Well, some of you did it. I was watching. Yeah.
What?
No idea.
So what is the Lie algebra of this guy? The Lie algebra of this thing. Again, you know, we are not going to have eyes here because the way we define the generators, but you can redefine them up to some factor of I, and you can reintroduce them. This is a this is actually a quite nice formula if you think about it a little bit. I got all the signs right. Anyway. So this is the, say, the Lie algebra of SON. Yeah.
So since SON isn't that only like half of O?
Right.
So why can we generate O with the same?
Right. I mean, okay, this is a very good point. I think, you know, ON. So ON is like this. And, this is SON, but only this part is actually a Lie group.
Okay.
And to get to this part, what you do is that you have this discrete transformation where the determinant of O is minus one. You multiply with those guys all the elements of SON, and that's how you get to this other part. You're right, technically speaking, this is really the, so that's why I kind of stopped, right? I think else. The Lie algebra part is just talking about this thing, but then the other part, if you want to generate it and, you know, also like the identity element is here, and you can go continuously to any point in SON, but you cannot go there in a continuous fashion. Okay, now the maximal set of commuting generators, so there's a, you know, the of a Lie algebra. Now it plays a very important role. you know, both in, or I should say Lie algebras, both in classification of Lie algebras and the representation theory, and we'll see that tomorrow, although in a very trivial setting. So this set is called, the Cartan subalgebra sometimes wrote as CSA. So what I mean is that, so we have some Lie algebra, and you know, in our case it's a set of TAB, and there is some subset, and that subset is something, I don't know how to say tilde or something, or usually it's by H. And let's call it H, say AB, such that, you know, all elements of the subset commute with each other, okay?
And that, when you mean subset is, I mean, it's not that the H's are T's, right?
Yes, that's what I mean.
The H's are T's?
Yeah, subset of the T's.
But isn't it possible that I have to do linear combinations of the T's to get the H's?
Yes. Yeah, the way I've defined them, they're going to be a subset.
Okay.
The way I've defined them, they're going to be a subset. Yeah.
What's like, I feel like we've written these like generators as like TAB, also like TI.
Yeah.
T tilde, like, and the J. Like, what are the differences, or what should we like?
Right. Right. What are the differences between those like labels, right? So, you know, in principle, you can just like have an integer labeling your set. It's some set of finite things. You say this is object number one, object number two, three, four, five, six, seven. It turns out for specific groups, there are more for, because of notational facility, because the way you're going to do mathematics, there are more cleverer way of labeling them.
Okay.
And for the ON group, a clever way of labeling them is this. And it's a convenient, and you might say why, right? Because we don't see that in rotation. But in a minute, we'll see that the SO4 group has a close cousin, which is the Lorentz group, SO1, 3, where essentially, these guys, you use, you know, something that is very close to this. So there, you know, you have say 0, 1, t, 0, 2, t, 0, 3, t, 0, 4. Sorry, what am I saying? Yeah, there's no 4. So these would then generate the Lorentz boost. And they're in some sense some angle through the time axis, some imaginary rotation in the time axis and some space axis, right? You know, because if you remember in the Lorentz boost formulae, you know, you can, it has cosh and sinh instead of cause and sine, right? Whereas the other ones, say t1, 2, t2, 3, t, g1, you know, these are, you know, these are, for example, the rotations on those plates. So, and then what we do is that for, you know, you saw in the tutorial, then the parameters of the Lorentz group, we said, we defined them to be, you know, antisymmetric, right? So they have, so by the same logic, there are only 6 of them. So omega 0, 1 is a boost angle. Omega 0, 2 is another boost. And omega 0, 3 is also another boost. Whereas omega, so these are boosts. Whereas omega 1, 2 is a rotation. And then, you know, when we wrote the Lie algebra element, I think there I chose t such that they were imaginary or, well, they were not like real like here. It was something like this. And this is a very nice notation. And so for example, in when we go to unitary groups, I'm not going to choose that because in the unitary groups, we don't really get any advantage from labeling the generators like that. There, you know, just labeling them as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, that's actually good enough.
So like we were like in this case when we had like t1, 2, and then you redefined, you related the JAs to the T
right.
With the two indices, and then set a computation relationship,
yeah.
Which is what I think we've been defining our Lie algebras based off of, like some sort of computation.
Right. This is the more familiar form of, yeah.
So it's like you can keep rewriting these generators in different ways, but they're all related to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And convenient.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because in three dimensions, you know, it, you know, you can confuse the number of axes. Rotation around x axis around the z axis is the same as rotation in xy plane. So the axes and the two planes go hand in hand, and the epsilon tensor is exactly the map that takes you from, you know, it's a cross product, right? The cross product is the, you know. Cross product, what does a cross product do? It takes two vectors to one vector, right? It's actually like an isomorphism that is only defined in three dimensions. Cross products in higher dimensions, you know, they don't generalize. You have to use some other things, okay?
Can you like explain this statement in more detail? Because like,
yeah. Yeah, I'm going to come. So yeah, right. I'm going to go to that right now. So. So, so for example, say we have, say, so the TABs, say, have a subset, and let's, you know, call them H, AB. I'm just you know, okay, so which have the property that if you take any element from this subset, they commute with each other. Okay, so then that set, that set is that subset is the Cartan subalgebra. Okay, what is the physical intuition behind this? You know, SON is just, it's a generalization of rotations, right? SO3 is rotation in three dimension, and it leaves some vector, the length of some vector in three dimensional space, invariant, right? Similarly, if you take a position vector in n dimensional space and you do rotations of it such that its length is not changed, those matrices that, you know, implement those rotations, they are the SON matrices. So let's think in n dimensions, which I'm sure all of you can do. In three dimensions, as in higher dimensions, suppose you take a rotation in the 1-2 plane. Of course, there is no axis around which you're doing the rotation because there are more than one axis perpendicular to the 1-2 plane, right? So you have to think of rotations in higher dimensions as happening in a plane. So suppose we are in some even dimensional space, say so n is equal to say 2k, all right? And you're saying, okay, I'm going to so I can divide up all the direction into pairs, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and so on and so forth. And so if you do now rotations in 1, 2 plane, of course, that's, you know, that will be independent of a rotation in the 3, 4 plane. So those two rotations will commute. And, you know, what the Cartan subalgebra elements are doing is that they're generating these rotations in these independent planes, two planes. Okay? And if the number of dimension is even, then of course there are only k of these, you know, rotations that will commute with each other. So if n is 2k, the k is the dimension of the Cartan subalgebra, and this is known as the rank of the Lie algebra or the group. So the number of elements in the Cartan subalgebra is known as the rank of the Lie group, okay, or the Lie algebra. Right. Now, what happens if n is not even? So n is, say, 2k plus 1. Poor guy. He doesn't have any partner to rotate with, this x dimension. So the rank doesn't change. So for SO2K, the rank is K, and also for SO2K plus 1, the rank is still K. So what is the rank of SO3? 1, which is kind of a trivial. The Cartan subalgebra consists of one element and it commutes with itself, of course. But for SO4, it's 2. And all right, so I will leave it as an exercise for you to figure out what the elements of the Cartan subalgebra would look like in matrix form. Okay, a closely related group is that O n comma m, and these satisfy this relationship, where n is some metric tensor, but we write it as a matrix, which has, so this has, say, n minus ones along its diagonal and plus m plus ones. And the Lorentz group, so of course these matrices also have an SONM subgroup. And the Lorentz group, the Lorentz group that consists of boosts and rotations, you know, they are an example of this kind of group. If you're doing n-dimensional quantum, if you're doing quantum field theory in n dimensions, then the SO2 comma n is the, so this is the, sorry, Lorentz group. But the SO2 comma n is the the conformal group. So this is the group that transforms your space-time. It doesn't respect the metric of your flat space-time. So you take some Minkowski space and n dimensions, and but you make all the transformation, but which preserve the angle between small vectors, and that's the conformal group, and it plays an important role in conformal field theory. Also, it's a symmetry of certain anti-de Sitter space. So the algebra, the generators, they're very similar. The Lie algebra, you just replace delta by eta, and you get the Lie algebra. So in the remaining 7 minutes, I will start, and although I will not end, I will not finish a discussion of the SUN group. If I die. All right, the SUN group. So this consists of U such that U dagger is U inverse, and the determinant of U is plus one. This is also written as U dagger U is one. So what is the dimension? So, okay, so U are N by N matrices with complex entries. Okay. So that means that U has 2N squared real parameters. But of course, we have to then look at these conditions. So it's easier to analyze than this one, easier to analyze this guy. And by, you know, an argument that is very analogous to what we did for the SON and the ON groups, you can show that there are N real conditions coming from the diagonal. And then now the off-diagonal elements are not real. So So there are n minus 1, you know, real conditions coming from the off diagonal. And the determinant condition actually gives you one condition. So this is the number of constraints . So if you to find the dimension of SUN, you subtract this from 2n squared, and so if I have done my algebra correctly, this should give me n squared minus 1. Right, 2n squared minus n squared, and then n, these two guys cancel, yeah. So this is the dimension of SUN, and so for SUN, it's, we assume that an SUN matrix has this form. Then U dagger is equal to U inverse. So on the left-hand side, I have U dagger means I goes minus I. These are the, you know, the real n squared minus 1 parameters. Then on the left-hand side, we have so if I take a log of both sides, this, the size are arbitrary. So this means that the generators, TA, they satisfy this condition, so they are Hermitian. Now, the rank of SUN is n minus 1. And to do this, we have to explicitly, I will give an explicit listing of its generators. So the generators come in three groups. N minus 1, okay, sorry. I forgot another important thing is there's a very useful formula in matrices where which says that if you take the determinant of a matrix M, that is equal to the trace of the log of M. So in our case, the determinant of U is 1. Right. Is that correct or?
E to the M of
this explanation. E to the trace of the log.
Right, yeah, sorry, yeah. So, so that means that, you know, but on the other hand, you know, what do our matrices look like? Our matrices are some exponential matrix times I, they, you know, psi a t a, then if you, so the determinant of this guy has to be 1, but it also means that the exponential, the exponential of the trace of this thing, the trace of this thing needs to be 0, right? So this implies that the trace of the generators is 0. So our generators are Hermitian, and they're traceless. Okay. So by using those two facts, we can write down n minus 1 linearly independent. And mutually commuting matrices, which form the Cartan's of algebra of SUN, and these matrices have the form H1 is 1. Okay, and then H2 is, so essentially HP has 1 in the pth diagonal element and always minus 1 at the end. Then we have HN minus 1, which has of course, it's easy to see that all of these guys commute. There are two more types of generators. And of course, this means, okay. And let me just finish by writing those down. So there are n minus 1 by 2 real symmetric matrices. And those matrices can be labeled as with AB, where A and B goes from 1 to N, and they're symmetric. And you can verify this is Hermitian. And just using there's a plus sign. And then N minus 1 by 2, purely imaginary, and antisymmetric matrices. So let's call them they're given by so you won't really need this very explicitly, but I just wanted to.
Tuba?
Yeah.
Do we have to impose TAA 0 for the first one? We'll have too much.
Right. No, you're right.
Too much matrices.
Yeah. You're that's a very good point.
TAA 0.
Yeah, I think so, but let me get back to that. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's a very good point. So, okay. So, what happens to, say, TAA? Yeah, because then the counting is not, you're right. It may be that so do we impose that? Yeah, let me check that, okay? Yeah, thank you. All right, yeah?
N minus one linear independent mutually commuting matrices, which OCA? CSA?
Which form?
Oh.
Yeah. So so the rank of SUN is N minus 1. All right, so I think any more questions?
What was the comment that was just made?
Oh, he was saying, the way I've written it, it's not really antisymmetric in A and B, so this counting doesn't work.
Oh, but of course A and B, A has to be less than B, right? I mean, if you let A and B run freely, it doesn't Right,
yeah, yeah.
Just as what happened in the rotation group, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In the rotation group, we also had to say with A less than B, otherwise you overcome.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your independence.
Yeah, yeah.
Because TAB equals minus TB.
Right, okay, yeah. Yeah, so, okay. So that's the bit is that, right, so this, yeah. Right. So, but let me check that, you know, and get back to that, say A is less than B or the other way around. All right, so anything else?